And now, Move the Sticks with Daniel Jeremiah and Bucky Brooks.
What's up, everybody? DJ Bucky here on Move the Sticks, and the college football season has come to a close. And Buck, that was a fireworks show for a finish.
Yeah, unbelievable. But this is exactly what you want to see. You want to see the two best teams. You want to see the best players play at their best. And I won't say that Alabama played their best game, but man, I was thoroughly entertained by watching a bunch of guys that we know we will see on Sundays.
A lot of NFL players on that field, and I don't want to bury the lead here. Had a one-game lead coming into the picks, Buck. All you got to do is finish. You just got to finish. And I picked Alabama. I went with Nick Saban. And thanks a lot, Nick.
He
cost
me.
And now we've got Kent winning for the 900th year in a row. Unbelievable.
Yeah, I mean, it's kind of unbelievable.
Go ahead, Kent. Go ahead. Go ahead. Jump on there, Kent. You can jump on there and pat yourself on the back there, bud. You won again. You and Sully shared the title.
Yeah, it feels good. It feels good to be a co-champion this year. I won outright the first 2 years. This year I co-champ with Sully. We kind of do a little Nebraska-Michigan. I'll say he's Michigan, I'm Nebraska, because we know who would have won that game had it happened in 97. And overall, it's cool. You know, it's Clemson 2 and 3 years. And I'll say this, even though I picked Clemson to win that game, none of us saw 28-point just butt whooping. That was that was a surprise for sure.
Well, tell the truth, Kent. Tell the truth, because no matter who I picked, you had to pick the opposite to have a chance to win. If you didn't have to, would you have picked Clemson to win the game?
Well, of course.
Oh, you're full of it. You would have picked Alabama.
Of course. It's there in writing. I picked Clemson.
Yeah. Hey, Buck, this was the thought. First of all, we'll get to the players here in a second, but this was the overriding thought I had. We talked about this a little bit off air. Man, I'm just watching, and I know obviously they're winning, so the attitude's different, but watching how happy and how much fun and just you're a kid and you want to go spend 3 or 4 years someplace and watching Clemson and saying, okay, we can play at the highest level and I can have all that fun. Or I can go to Alabama where even when you win, it's just tense. I mean, I think what Phil Savage's book was, what, fourth and goal every day. That's the mindset there at Alabama. Now they've produced a lot of great NFL players, but as a 17, 18-year-old kid, you got to go spend the next 3 years and you know you're going to win at either place. Why would you ever go to Alabama over Clemson? That's my question.
You know, the funny thing, I kind of break this up, and I think it can be broken down into three Fs: fun, family, and future. You go to Clemson, you're going to have a lot of fun. They're going to treat you like family, and your future is going to be an opportunity to play in the pros because you're surrounded by great dudes, and they have quite a pipeline. I don't know why you wouldn't want to go to Clemson the way that they have it rolling now. And from a scouting standpoint, like I made this note and observation when I looked at them on the field with Alabama, and I believe, like, look, there's only a handful of teams that are what we call, like, those premier programs that have the elite guys where scouts are kind of – flocking to watch them. But when I look at Clemson and I'm looking at the way that they're built, I felt like in watching that game, they had more explosive athletes than Alabama. And it sounded crazy to say that out loud, but I felt like Clemson was faster. They were more athletic than Alabama. And I think it showed up in some of those plays that they made on the outside that were kind of scramble tosses that turned into touchdowns. The team speed for Clemson, to me, was a little overwhelming, and it's rare that you see that when you see an Alabama team play.
Yeah, so you said this, you brought up this point, you said there's five teams in college football now: Clemson, Georgia, Bama, Ohio State, and Oklahoma. If I'm mm-hmm. I got those right, those are
yeah,
the right
that's
five
it,
teams.
Yeah, that's right? It. Yep. And maybe LSU you could throw in there, but that's about it, though.
Yeah, but
the
then
Irish.
No,
you have the Irish level up.
No,
No. In terms of like NFL, like they look like an NFL team when they walk onto the field, like in terms of the way their size,
see,
their stature,
to me, I would even take, like you're talking about, to me, I would say Notre Dame and Oklahoma might both be, it might be four,
a notch below.
Just, and I know everybody said Oklahoma and Georgia, I get that, but I just don't know if they're going to be able to navigate those two teams you'd have to navigate, because Oklahoma's a lopsided team. And really, Notre Dame's somewhat of a lopsided team. Mm-hmm. They're more defense than offense. I look at what Clemson and Alabama can do offensively and defensively, and I look at what Ohio State and Georgia could do offensively and defensively. And I think those are the four teams that have a chance to be excellent and with loaded with NFL dudes on the line of scrimmage on both sides, and then to have the skill talent as well. It might even just be four teams, Buck.
Yeah, I mean, you very well maybe right on that. You know, like when you think about when we used to go on the road and scout, and we would love to go to certain schools, and you stand on the field and you just spend your time.
Defensive lineman.
Wow. Yeah. I think that is it. And that brought me to another thing that I looked at. And I said, like, the team building lesson that I would take from Clemson, quarterback, offensive skill players, and D-line guys. Because those were the areas, to me, that showed up in that game. Quarterback is elite, even though he's a true freshman. Their skill guys are explosive, they're athletic, and they're big. Big, fast, and physical, which is what you want. And then on the defensive line, they can just hit you with ways and ways of guys. I think if you're going to build a premier program, be it in college or in the pros, I don't think you can go wrong using that kind of model.
So my formula that I had told you about, the history of the playoff, was if you look at the games, every single one of them are won by the team with the better defensive line. Now, I know Quinnen Williams is the best defensive lineman in that game last night, and they've got Roquan Davis. They've got some good players, but I think maybe the collection of talent for Clemson, you could make a case the collection of their defensive line was even better than Alabama's.
Yeah, I mean, I think so. I think
without Dexter Lawrence.
Yeah, and I think the difference, and I came into this thinking that without Dexter, Clemson would be exposed in terms of the inability to stop the run. And they couldn't really stop the run when Alabama ran it. The turnovers were problematic and a big issue. But the athleticism of Christian Wilkins and some of the other guys in terms of being able to run and chase things down, they were able
Farrell
to create pressure.
And Xavier Thomas.
Yeah, they were able to create pressure and do some things that we really haven't seen people do against Alabama. We've seen Georgia, whatever. But I just believe with Clemson and with Alabama, Georgia, Ohio State, and maybe like those teams have the collection of elite athletes and players to kind of set themselves apart from the rest of the college football world.
Thoughts on the quarterback there and Trevor Lawrence?
Man, look, he's everything that we thought he would be. Obviously, you and I had an opportunity to watch him a couple summers ago when he was in the Elite 11, the opening. He and Justin Fields, and I know that this conversation for the next year or so is going to be all about Trevor Lawrence, but I'm just going to urge people, don't forget about Justin Fields, because there are a lot of people that were there that would tell you that Justin Fields is on par and maybe even better than Trevor Lawrence. We may have to wait a year or so to see him at Ohio State, but I think in – what is this draft class that he'll be in, 2021?
21, yeah.
Potentially. We will talk about those two guys being joined at hip. I just think now the way that kids are throwing the ball more in high school, the way they're playing football year-round, 7-on-7 and the like, we're getting a more developed quarterback than we've ever seen. And I think Trevor Lawrence's ability to play on a big stage, to win a national championship as a true freshman, speaks to how the game has changed over the last decade when it comes to the development of the young players.
Yeah, and you mentioned seeing these guys as high schoolers up there at the opening. And Trevor Lawrence, I mean, he was outstanding up there, Buck. But I left that weekend just watching for 2 days, watching these guys. It's 7-on-7. I understand it's not. You're not playing with pads on. I left there thinking that Justin Fields was even better. I mean, that's got to get you fired up if you're Ohio State to know you've got that level of talent coming in your direction. I don't think he lost a 7-on-7 game. It was a tournament, as you know. They're up there playing game after game after game. I don't think Justin Fields lost one up there. Was throwing it all over the place and can move around. I think both these kids are special. We've seen it now with Trevor Lawrence. I think Ohio State's going to see it here pretty quick with this kid too.
Oh, absolutely. I think we are going to see it. I think the way that the game is changing, these guys are being better prepared to be able to step on the field right away and play. It's a game changer. And, you know, like it's funny, we always talk about coaching and X's and O's and the like, but, man, I had a coach tell me this the other day when I was talking to him on the phone. He said, you will never find a Hall of Fame coach who hasn't coached Hall of Fame players. Meaning that when you want to win national titles and you want to be a program that fancies himself as the elite, you better acquire elite players. And I think the difference between the haves and the have-nots strictly comes down to the personnel.
And I know we want to transition here to your conversation that you had with Charles Davis yesterday. But before we get to that, I like to hit you with breaking news on here, Buck. We did it on the last podcast
because
I told
you
about
LaFleur.
So I've got some more for you here because now it's being reported by our Ian Rappaport that the Tampa Bay Buccaneers are focused on hiring former Arizona Cardinals head coach Bruce Arians as their new coach. The interest is mutual. Negotiations are likely to begin soon. In the words of Ian, here we go.
I mean, but I think that's actually a perfect fit. And here's why I believe it's a perfect fit for Arians.
They've
got
to get Jameis going.
They need to get Jameis going. A lot of the comparisons that we have for Jameis coming out, Big Ben Roethlisberger, who was one of the formative guys around Big Ben Roethlisberger? It was Bruce Arians. Bruce Arians was also around Andrew Luck. He has developed quarterbacks, particularly drop-back quarterbacks in a vertical passing game. He does a great job with that. When he looks at the Tampa Bay job offensively, they have weapons already on the outside. They have a playmaker in Mike Evans. They have two tight ends in O.J. Howard and Cameron Brate. They have another guy that is emerging. Who's the other little young receiver?
From Penn State, Godwin.
So yeah. They have weapons. They just need to get the defense going. And if he comes with who I think he's coming with, which will probably be Ty Bowles,
right? Yeah.
I just like the way this situation plays out. And who knows, if they can ever get anybody that can run the ball or do some of the things that he likes to do with the running game, why can't they just jump back into the mix? Because this is a team that we've talked about being on the come. I think Bruce Arians is the right coach. And for Jameis, I think you need a grizzled, hard-headed coach to get him to finally play the way that we think that he could play.
All right, let me ask you a question here. There was a coach at Arizona named Bruce Arians that had a young rookie running back out of Northern Iowa named David Johnson,
mm-hmm.
who, if I recall, Buck, I think he played pretty well in that system. Mm-hmm. Now, I'm trying to think of somebody maybe with a similar skill set that might be a free agent.
You're thinking maybe this guy.
He didn't play this last year. Yeah, some fresh legs.
You think Le'Veon Bell going to Tampa,
couldn't you see that? Couldn't you see that marriage taking place?
He does have a way with players that, different personalities. He would be a nice fit. Catch the ball out the backfield.
Yeah, because everybody's just kind of giving him to the Jets. Everybody's kind of just said that Bell end up being a Jet. I'm telling you, I wouldn't sleep on Tampa.
Oh, I think depending on the coach, I think Bruce Arians, look, he took Honey Badger, and look, they've had a bunch of different personalities in Arizona. He was able to kind of manage the locker room and control it and get those guys to play the right style. And the one thing that we know Bruce Arians likes, he loves good players. And he'll find a way to put playmakers in a situation to make plays. That would be a really, really good fit.
All right, so there you go. We'll see if that gets done here. Might be done by the time you're listening to this. We'll see what happens with the rest of these coaching openings, though. It'll be fascinating to watch. All right, let's get to your conversation you had with our good buddy Charles Davis. There is nobody better in the business. He will be on the call for the Eagles and the Saints this Sunday, and you had a chance to catch up with him just the other day.
It is always a good time when I get to bring on, man, I mean, this guy, we go way back. Charles Davis, a Fox analyst. You're actually doing the Fox 440 game this Sunday, the New Orleans Saints and the Philadelphia Eagles. CD, so much to talk to you about, especially when it comes to the league. But how are you doing?
I'm doing great, Bucky. It's always a pleasure to talk with you. And you're right, we do go way back, don't we?
I could
have never covered you if we played against each other. So I was glad that I missed that time frame. That worked out way better for me.
Oh,
I'm glad that we get the chance to interact this way. This way I got a chance of trying to keep up.
Well,
the other way, no shot whatsoever.
Nah, you're playing modest. But one thing that I do know, you always keep up with what's going on in the league. And coming off that first weekend, wildcard weekend of games, a couple things stood out to me. Defense is standing out because they're keeping the points down. And then quarterback experience really, really matters. What did you see when you looked at last weekend's games?
Well, can I stay with what you brought up first? Because I think you and I are of a similar mindset right now. When the season was going on, obviously offenses were exploding like crazy, and that's all we talked about, right? And I think our nadir was the Rams-Chiefs game, right? That Monday night game.
Yep.
And everybody in the league was like, oh, my God, these defenses have no shot anymore. And then I thought, and I don't know what you thought. I'm eager to get what you believe about this. I thought that the defenses got back into the game in the New Orleans-Dallas Thursday night game.
Yep.
It was 13-10.
Mm-hmm.
I thought that, you know, the pendulum was swinging so far offensively. And then when Dallas did what they did to hold New Orleans to 10, even though Dallas didn't even score in the second half and won the ball game, and then we start seeing more and more of those games. And you've been around the league. You played in the league. You've been a scout in the league. Isn't it interesting that every year when we get to playoff time, I don't care what sport we're talking about, defense kicks in, right? Hockey scoring goes down in the playoffs. Basketball scoring goes down in the playoffs. I think football scoring is no different because people scout you to within an inch of your life. You know, every possession is so critical. I think people take extra time. that takes a little bit of time, cut the clock out of the game, right on down the line. And then to your point about the quarterbacking, I talked in the last 2-3 weeks, I talked to two different general managers and one player personnel director in the league, independent of each other. I asked them all the same question. What scares you most about your team heading into the playoffs, or what scares you the most when you get into the playoffs? And they all said the same thing. Number one, what's our health, which, as you know, is paramount. But number two, who's playing quarterback for the other team? Because that's where it all begins and ends for them. And all of them said the same thing. I don't care how good the young quarterbacks are. If it's a veteran who's a good player, he scares me more at playoff time until the young kid proves himself. And so that's what Mahomes has to go through this year, right? Goff got caught in it last year, didn't he, Bucky?
Yep.
I mean, that first game, it wasn't all on him. I felt like the Rams as a team looked up and went, whoa, 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 what is this? And Atlanta had been there and got them. So I just wanted to kind of stay with your vein because I thought it was very important, and you and I are sharing a similar thought.
You know, it's funny that you said that. Like, you're absolutely right, as the tipping point being the Cowboys, because I've always been a believer, and I've talked to many coaches who believe this, the real football starts after Thanksgiving. You probably hit about the 9th or 10th game of the season. The tendencies are beginning to kind of show themselves. And defensive coordinators, we can talk about offensive wizardry and gurus. Defensive coordinators are smart. They've made adjustments. And then to your second point about the quarterbacks, I absolutely believe that the experience matters in the playoffs. You have been around the game long enough. You've called playoff games. It's a little different in the playoffs than during the regular season. Things happen a little faster. It's a little more physical. And the consequences of poor decisions matter more. Experienced quarterbacks understand that, and they kind of settle in. Young quarterbacks, it takes about a half for them to kind of get into that mind frame. And I think the game that you're calling, where we have Nick Foles taking on the New Orleans Saints, what can we make about the Nick Foles phenomenon in Philly?
It is one of the better things that we've seen in a while in terms of all of us trying to analyze what does it truly mean. Because I don't know that there's one answer that solves it all. And with Nick Foles, it certainly appears to me that the smaller doses in the playoffs of Nick Foles are different than when you get the full dose of Nick Foles. And what I mean by that is he had the one great year with Philadelphia, 27 touchdowns, 2 interceptions. And you know what the irony is, if I'm using the word ironic correctly, I hope I am. Guess who he lost to in the playoffs that year?
Who did he lose to?
Drew Brees and the Saints.
Ooh.
At home. Hmm. And that was with Chip Kelly's offense. And you remember he had that incredible year. He set the records. He did all the things that he did. But remember the other opportunities Nick Foles has had to be a starter in the league?
Yeah.
You didn't walk away saying, that's my quarterback for the next 5 to 10 years, did you? You're always like, okay, who else do we have? And even the start of this year, the sense I got, I don't know what you heard, but what I got out of Philadelphia is that they were kind of hoping they could go a little bit longer before they brought Carson Wentz back.
Yeah.
And it got to the point where they felt like they kind of had to bring him back, didn't they?
Yeah.
And here we are again, the second year in a row where Foles has turned it around, and there's Carson Wentz trying to smile on the sidelines. Had to be thinking to himself, again? A second year like this? And off we go. But his experience in the playoffs helped him this year. Brees obviously has experiences and won a Super Bowl. I thought, to your point, that on Sunday, we saw what your point was about young quarterbacks, veteran quarterbacks, Phillip Rivers, Lamar Jackson.
Mm-hmm.
It showed up that day, didn't it? When Lamar finally got his legs under him, he played pretty well down the stretch. But throughout, Phillip Rivers did enough to make things go well and never made the big mistake against a very good defense. No interceptions, no turnovers. That was huge in Chargers' win.
You know, that is the big thing. Like, it's not necessarily that you have to win the game. You can't
lose
the game. And right. you brought up the Nick Foles, Carson Wentz debate. It's one thing that I'm wondering if this continues to play out. Is it better have the winning quarterback in a Nick Foles or the franchise quarterback in Carson Wentz? Because we could be looking at a situation where Nick Foles goes to the championship game or even to a Super Bowl. We have seen him win when we said that the competition and the pressure is at its peak.
Yeah.
We've never seen Carson Wentz do that. How do you hit? Who do you hit your wagon to, even though we know that Carson Wentz is a better player? This other guy has been a winner.
And you know what's interesting about that, Bucky, is that if you and I were having this conversation last year, I'm not going to speak for you. I'll throw mine out there, and you follow if that's okay.
Mm-hmm.
I would have said unequivocally, give me Wentz. That's my franchise quarterback. He was playing at an all-pro level, MVP level when he got hurt last year. And I don't care how well Foles plays in this short stint, even if we win a Super Bowl, and they did, I want Wentz for the long haul. I've invested in him. He's a better player overall, and I've seen Foles ride the roller coaster. Now we're doing it 2 years in a row.
Mm-hmm.
Let's say we do what you said, and they get you know, with the possibility that they get to the Super Bowl, heck, win it, whatever. Just getting there will be more than enough. Which way do you go? Because one of the things I just looked up, and I just had it sent to me, and it was very interesting, to put it mildly, okay? You're going to love this one. Nick Foles, right, in this season now, with Carson, with Alshon Jeffrey, because you can see the connection is there, I believe he is like 23 of 27 throwing Alshon Jeffrey down the stretch in this season. And I don't think that we ever saw Wentz and Jeffrey make that same connection. We saw Wentz and Ertz, but not Wentz and Jeffrey. So it's a very interesting deal how certain quarterbacks, certain receivers get together, they find it, and they do it. I still think in the long haul, my money is on Carson Wentz, but your locker room may very well say, guys, we've gotten to two Super Bowls with this guy. You know, how can we replace him? And that's where it's going to be very interesting.
Yeah, it is very fascinating. Obviously, on the other side, the New Orleans Saints don't have that kind of situation with Drew Brees. But what is interesting, you're dealing with an older quarterback. They're in the postseason. Everyone is ready to kind of punch their ticket to the Super Bowl because they're playing at home. What are some of the issues that you see when you've been able to study the New Orleans Saints?
Well, I think they've got to make sure their offensive line is healthy, Bucky, because down the stretch, I thought during the middle of the season I had them at Cincinnati. And I thought their offensive line was functioning the best in pro football. Armstead at left tackle, Ramczyk at right tackle. You could leave Pete inside at left guard. You know, you get who's the center? Unger, Max Unger,
handled
things at the pivot. You know, they were strong. Warford playing right guard, and you know he just moves people, especially in the run game. And they were functioning so well, but they've taken some dings down the stretch and had to, you know, be a little bit makeshift. If they've got all their guys up and healthy, that'll be huge for Brees, because then you can do whatever you want offensively. You know, because Ingram, they got going about midseason in the Cincinnati game. Kamara, you know what he does and scares the heck out of people. The other part I would throw in there is, as you pointed out, defensive coordinators are going to do their best to take away what you do really well. So who's going to step up when they go ahead and double and triple Mike Thomas? Who's going to be the other receivers that make it happen? They drafted Tre'Quan Smith out of UCF. I don't know that he caught 30 balls all year. You know, Keith Kirkwood was an undrafted free agent. They activated midseason. He's actually played fairly well for them. But is he going to be the guy to take the pressure off? You know, it's who's going to be that other receiver to help out Mike Thomas so that he doesn't have everyone rotating to him and Brees having to throw into double and triple coverage?
Yeah, it's a fascinating game. It's one to watch. There's also a little incentive and motivation. The Eagles players are saying that the Saints ran up the score the last meeting. And so it should be something that is fun to watch. One thing that we will watch, obviously, as we continue to move down the road and fast forward to the combine and the draft, and we'll work together, obviously, on path to the draft.
Yeah.
Quarterbacks in this class, and we just got the announcement recently that Dwayne Haskins, the quarterback from Ohio State, is foregoing his last season to enter the league. Have you had an opportunity to look at the Ohio State standout, and what are your thoughts?
Bucky, I think he's the best-looking pro prospect coming out this year at the quarterback position. I was waiting for his official announcement because, you know, we work in the NFL Network. We got to be very careful about underclassmen. But now that he's made the announcement and announced his intentions, I think we're okay to actually talk about him, right?
Yep.
So I think he's the best-looking pro prospect, and I thought that when I watched him during the season. You know, he is a black quarterback, and the only reason I bring that up is we often get the official, as soon as you hear your black quarterback, the next thing you read in analysis is, boy, is he athletic. Well, he's an athlete, but his legs are the least amount, least thing that's going to scare you. But he moves well with pocket presence. He can climb the pocket well. He slides well in the pocket. He does all of those things, but he's going to beat you with his arm and his mind first before he beats you with his legs. He looks like the prototypical old-school NFL quarterback, but you have to look at the prism of 2018, meaning most of his game is from gun, right?
Yep.
In the old days, we talk about under center, this. Well, a lot of the pro teams are playing from gun, so it's not the same issue it was before. But Bucky, to me, he steps back there. He stands in that pocket. He makes his movement from that pocket. He reads, he surveys, he scans, he goes through his progressions, all the terms you want, and then he is accurate throwing the football. I mean, that ball's in the place it's supposed to be, not just hitting a receiver. You know, people forget Tim Tebow was like a 65% thrower in college. But you can tell people better than I can, the windows are wide open in college because the receivers are usually better.
Yep.
Than the defensive backs that they're playing against. In the NFL, that flattens out. So your accuracy really comes into play. This kid, I think, is that guy. To me, he ascends to the top of that quarterback class. And the Giants are sitting there at number six. They may have to make a move up to make sure no one else jumps up there, because to me, he's a perfect fit as Eli Manning's heir apparent. Draft him. He doesn't have to play next year. You play Manning one more year. Remember, he's a redshirt sophomore, and then he can go ahead and take over. Because I think the other guys, whoever you want to bring up, there's some good prospects in there. But to me, Haskins looks like the number one guy as I'm starting this process.
Yeah, I completely agree. And I think if anyone watched him perform at the Rose Bowl, you saw him get off to a hot start. You can see him check off all the boxes in terms of size, arm talent, poise, pocket presence, ability to really use all of the field. I think the biggest thing that he is going to have to overcome is going to be the lack of experience when people talk about him being a one-year starter. Obviously, we saw Mitch Trubisky go number two overall a couple of seasons ago with only 13 collegiate starts. It'll be a similar conversation when we begin to kind of dig into Dwayne Haskins. But the thing that we do know, he is certainly talented. Without question.
Man. There's no doubt. And you're right about that with the Trubisky comparison, because one-year starter, what really impressed me about Haskins, even though he was a one-year starter, do you remember 2 years ago, the Michigan game?
Yeah, he had a chance to jump in.
And he had to jump in because JT Barrett was hurt. Kid showed me a lot that day, because you know what that rivalry is like.
Yep.
And you know the weight of the world that's on you in the Ohio State-Michigan game. And this kid came in and handled it, and I thought, who is this guy? And remember, he beat out Joe Burrow, who just threw for 394 and four against UCF, was a very talented, very fast football team. And I didn't expect that out of Burrow. I don't know about you, but I didn't expect ever to see him go 394 and 4. But that's just me. But still, that's who Haskins beat out, and Burrow transferred to LSU. Tate Martell, one of the top prospects in the nation, is at Ohio State, and they gave him a couple of gimmick plays a game, but he was never close to beating out Haskins. This kid's talented and the real deal, and I just don't know if we can stick to the Bill Parcells, you know, 26 starts, three-year starter. I just don't know if we can stay there anymore, because the game's not like that.
Yeah, the game has certainly changed. And speaking of change, Cliff Kingsbury, former head coach of Texas Tech, the current offensive coordinator for USC, is being interviewed by a couple teams as a potential head coach. What are your thoughts on him, especially after he failed at Texas Tech in the Big 12?
Yeah, you know, Bucky, it feels to me, forced is the wrong word, but it feels to me like those who are hipped on getting the next offensive genius feel like I can plug in a head coach and surround him with the other people as long as I'm getting that offensive acumen. I'd be much more comfortable with Cliff Kingsbury as an OC in the NFL as opposed to being a head coach, only because he's going to walk through that door. And remember, he's not walking in and talking to 18 to 22-year-olds. You were in those locker rooms. That person who walks through that door matters, doesn't it? Mm-hmm. You know, we act like it's just a video game and Madden and can he draw plays. He's got to command the locker room and command respect. Both sides of the ball. Guys from 22 years old all the way to 40, right? Mm-hmm. And it's got to be the deal. And I just don't know that, again, it feels like, hey, we can do it with – he's offensive guy. We can make this thing work. I don't know if it's the best situation because I hear that about all these college coaches, and some of them can make the jump. Some of them it feels like I'm just trading for the offense, like Lincoln Riley at Oklahoma. I think Lincoln Riley made the best move he could make, which is stay at Oklahoma.
Absolutely.
Down the road, could very well be an NFL coach. I think at this stage of his career, he was smart enough to know himself and stay. Pat Fitzgerald, a defensive guy, maybe he could command it. I think that, you know, overall probably, but I think he's a college coach through and through.
Yeah.
And I think he understood that about himself and he stayed. Others may want to make that mistake. If you're Cliff Kingsbury and someone offered you a job, why would you say no? But to me, offensively, I would want him. Head coach, I'd be skeptical about that right at this stage.
Yeah, I think it's fascinating. This offseason is going to be just so interesting to watch, from head coaches going forward to what we see when the 2019 class reveals itself at the East-West, at the Senior Bowl, at the Combine, and then to the draft. I can't wait to do more and more stuff with you. Thanks so much for coming on and joining us today, CD.
Hey, thanks for having me, Bucky. I can't wait to do the same, picking your brain as always and trying to learn these guys and trying to get right. But it's always fun to get started on that process, isn't it? It's going to be a heck of a process as we get closer and closer to draft day in Nashville.
Hey, it will. Thanks so much, CD.
Thank you, Bucky. You take care.
Oh, there you have it. The great Charles Davis, Buck. I hate that I couldn't be there for that conversation. We went a little bit long on the aftermath, so I wasn't able to jump in the studio with you. But I love CD. He is the best, and definitely appreciate him taking some time and always offers some interesting insight there.
Hey, man. Love having that conversation. He knows so much about so many different things. Insight on Cliff Kingsbury to me was remarkable and fascinating. And then the breakdown on the games. I just can't wait to see how all of this stuff plays out. Divisional round weekend, the continuing hiring cycle when it comes to the coaches. Just a lot to process and take in, but CD was all on it.
Yeah, he's the best. So I appreciate him taking some time for us here on Move the Sticks. That's going to do it for us today. Thank you so much for listening. We've got some of those some new reviews on there on Apple Podcasts. We appreciate you guys leaving those for us and those ratings as well. We've got plenty more football coming your way. The closure of the college football season means, I guess you could say, it's the official draft season now. So if you're going to be a little bit down in the dumps there about no more college football, we're going to be talking about all those same players because they're all going to be marching towards the NFL draft. We'll have you covered right here on Move the Sticks, mock drafts, top 50s, top positional list. That's all on the way for Bucky and myself. So be on the lookout for that. Buck, on the notebook this week, we got a notebook. What do we got?
Man, we got so much different stuff. We're talking about Nick Foles and Carson Wentz and whether you want a winning quarterback versus a franchise quarterback. We can talk about Frank Reich and the job that he has done with the Indianapolis Colts in terms of play calling. And then I'm just trying to figure out some other stuff because Ezekiel Elliott is about to get paid. Should the Dallas Cowboys break the bank for their young running back?
You can check that out, NFL.com/Bucky Brooks, his notebook, the best in the business, each and every week. All right, that's going to do it for us. We'll see you next time right here on Move the Sticks.
Thanks for downloading Move the Sticks with Daniel Jeremiah and Bucky Brooks. For more, go to NFL.com/podcasts.